my class. I call the committee of the hold order on December the 5th. Madam Clerk. They move it. Madam Clerk.
Mayor Olson.
Here.
Alderman Dandria.
Here.
Alderman Mayor.
Here.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderman Taylor.
Excused.
Alderman Barber.
Here.
Alderwoman Mayor.
Here.
We have a quorum. Please rise and join the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item B, a presentation and training on affirmatively furthering fair housing. Boy, you got to be trained to do that. To satisfy the city's requirement as part of Milwaukee County's three-year CDBG program. Mr. Liberta.
I'd like to make a brief recognize our speakers today. We do have a contractual commitment through our participation in CDBG to make sure as a community we affirmatively further fair housing. And this is one of the steps that the county has identified that helps us move forward with doing that, which is training for plan commission members and staff who are unable to attend tonight. We are recording this, and we'll be sharing a copy of the PowerPoint and the handouts with them and asking them to make sure they go through and listen to the recording of this presentation so that we can do it. Because beyond just having a contractual commitment to it, there are statutory requirements, and this is something as a community we should be interested in pursuing and ensuring that we are in compliance and making this sort of thing available. So with that, I would like to introduce Corey Schneider Perugini and Margaret Bowitz, both program senior administrators with the Metropolitan Milwaukee Fair Housing Council.
Okay, before we do that, for the record, we do have from the Plan Commission, Commissioner Hogan, Commissioner Leon, Alderman Dandria is on the commission, as am I, so we have a minority quorum. Welcome.
Thank you. So a little bit about the Fair Housing Council before we get started in the training or the presentation. The Fair Housing Council was established almost 40 years ago when citizens of Milwaukee were observing a lot of discrimination and segregation that was going on and decided that they needed a way to enforce that discrimination and prevent it from happening. And so they formulated the Fair Housing Council, a full-service fair housing program that operates in the state of Wisconsin. Our mission is to promote fair housing throughout the state by combating illegal housing discrimination and by creating and maintaining racially and economically integrated housing patterns. So we do that through our four programs. Moving right along. Our enforcement program is the program that Margaret works in. Essentially, that is a program in which we can take complaints from people who feel they were discriminated against in the housing market, rentals, sales, homeowners insurance, or lending. And then, depending on the kind of complaint we get, we can investigate that claim and try to take action to remedy it. Outreach and education program is essentially educating and doing presentations to consumers and to housing providers throughout the state. We have a fair lending program that helps ensure equal access to lending products, mortgage products, for people of all races and protected classes. And then the Inclusive Communities program is the program that I work in, and that is looking at policies, housing-related policies that might have a barrier to people having equal access to housing, things that promote segregation or create segregation. So Margaret's going to start with giving some of the basics on the Federal State Fair Housing Act, the prohibited practices, and what the protected classes are.
Okay, thanks, Corey. If you'd like to follow along in that brochure that I think you have, What I'd like to do is just go over very briefly the protected classes. These are classes in which we're all members of multiple protected classes, and you cannot be discriminated against based on membership in any of these protected classes. I did look at your city ordinance, and I'm not sure when it was last changed or modified, but there are a few things that have been added to both state and federal fair housing laws that you don't cover. Now, obviously, there's nothing illegal about that or anything else. I just thought I'd mention it if you were going to be in a position of looking at your ordinance for some changes. The federally protected classes are race, color, sex, national origin, religion. Many of these are self-explanatory, but religion includes all of those mainstream faiths or religions we may be familiar with, but also many religions that in faiths we are not familiar with, and sometimes think they're not really religions, they're cults or social clubs or things of this nature. But the definition under the fair housing laws is very broad as to religion. Disability and handicap is one of the protected classes that isn't in your local ordinance, and this is protected under both state and federal fair housing laws. And handicap and disability are defined as a physical or mental impairment which substantially limits one or more major life activities. The definition is much broader than most of us are probably more familiar with Social Security Administration definition, but this is much broader than that. It's any physical or mental impairment which substantially impacts a major life activity, walking, talking, learning, hearing, seeing, socializing, housekeeping, any major life activities. Disability counts for nearly 50, a little over 50% of complaints filed nationwide, as well as in the state of Wisconsin. And familial status is the last protected class under the Federal Fair Housing Act, and because it was added at the same time as disability, it stands to reason that you didn't put this into your law at the last time it was changed either. The federal law protects households based on there being minor children in the household. Any situation in which minor children are domiciled in a household with placement there, that household is protected from discrimination. It certainly doesn't mean that a housing provider with a two-bedroom unit has to rent to a family of seven because there are children in the household. The federal government has provided some guidance as to reasonable occupancy standards, and that standard right now is two persons per sleeping area. But those are the federally protected classes. The following are the state protected classes. State of Wisconsin protects family status versus familial status. It's a little broader than familial status. Family status, a family is defined as one or more minor or adult relatives residing together. So under state law, if I want to live with an adult relative, my household is protected from discrimination, whereas it's not under federal because there are no minor children in the household. And if you have any questions, please ask as they come up. I should have said that ahead of time. And continuing now with the state fair protected classes, age, legal age of contract in Wisconsin, which is 18 and up, ancestry, marital status, whether one is married, widowed, single, divorced, or legally separated. This class, as well as family status, do not protect cohabitating households. Housing provider can choose to rent to cohabitating households or not, as long as it's a uniform policy applied equally to all individuals.
Margaret, excuse me.
Yeah.
Is there a top-end age that also puts you in a protected class?
There's no top-end to the state law. You might be referring to some exemptions based on age and familial status, and that's for housing for the elderly. And I think Franklin has a significant number of those properties. It's 55 and older housing and 62 and over housing.
And those facilities can discriminate
They can discriminate based on age as well as familial status. The exemption allows for housing, public housing, to have some exemptions for age and familial status. But in the private market, there's two types of elderly housing. There's 62 and over housing and 55 and older housing. And if you qualify for those exemptions, you don't have to rent to people under the age of 55 and are under the age of 62, and you don't have to rent to families with children.
What type of exemptions are there?
Well, for 55 and older housing, at least 80% of the units must be occupied by at least one person over the age of 55. So if you have Mr. and Mrs. Jones and you rent in 55 and older housing, you can rent to Mrs. Jones, who's 58, and Mr. Jones, who's 28. I like that difference in age. And not lose your exemption. And that 80-20, that 20%, you can't, a housing provider can rent that to people under 55, between 18 and 55, to families with children if they like. But the intent of that was so that in 55 and older housing, if Mrs. Jones dies, Mr. Jones does not have to vacate. He can still live there and take up 20% of the units.
So what are the difference exemptions between the 61 and the 55?
The 62 and over. In 62 and over housing.
I got 61 on the mind.
Well, I passed that long ago. In 62 and over housing, 100% of the units must be occupied by people over the 62 and over. So in 62 and over housing, if you rent a unit where one person is 63 and the other is 60, you lose your exemption. It's no longer valid. And those exemptions are, again, only based on age and familial status. No, I'm glad you did. Any other questions? I talk kind of fast.
So if you lose exemption, then the, let's say you were 62 and over, mm-hmm. and you rented to somebody 58, and his wife was, or, let's do this properly, his spouse was 63.
It's easier for me, isn't it?
And you rent to that person. So now you've opened the door to rent to anybody, 18 to whatever, right?
Families with children, yes.
And
now we're not
revert at some point?
Well, we're not talking about getting caught, okay? I'm talking about based on the law, the minute you do that, you have lost your exemption. Are there ways to gain back your exemption? Yes.
A better way to ask the question, yes.
Well, but they're extremely difficult. One of them I call morphing. And what that means is from today forward, I don't discriminate or turn down anybody under 62 that might apply. I don't terminate tenancy of anybody under 62, but I just happen to regain that 100% without any overt action. It's just difficult to do. A lot of this housing is newer housing. Some of it is luxury housing. It's very desirable housing. One of the other ways is if you empty your property, leave it vacant for a full 3 months, and do significant rehabbing, then you could reopen as housing for the elderly.
Does the council have what you consider a ratio for a community like ours for housing stock?
No, it does not. What communities do is they, what we see very often, and a lot of it has to do with the passage of the familial status provisions of the law. There are communities in Wisconsin that have accepted developer plans for elderly housing, but not for family housing, because they're afraid it's going to overload their school system and infrastructure. Now, is that illegal? It could be, okay? But no, you're not required to have a certain percentage of elderly versus family housing. Okay?
Alderman Will.
So if
this is committee to hold, so just go ahead.
If housing comes in and they say they're going to do only 55 and up rentals, and then they have some exemption to do that, can the municipality hold them at that? Or if they find that they they're not getting the rentals they want and they deliberately lose their status so they can start renting to others, can a municipality hold that status under their own laws?
No, very unlikely, because in theory, you did not allow that development because it was 55 and older. You only allowed that development because it would be attractive within your community, okay? Because if you do it because you don't want families with children, that's illegal.
But if they come in and sell us that that's why they're bringing it in, is, and they're telling us it's going to only be 55 and older, and then they don't hold it to that, is that?
I don't believe you can, okay? And part of that is, I mean, you can allow housing or properties or businesses, but because most communities are ever-evolving, it's not unusual for somebody to request a change to their zoning maybe or something. And this type of housing, if they find they cannot operate at a profit, it's very likely that they will open their doors to all individuals. And then they have to rent to people 18 on up and families with children and families without children. Yeah.
Are there significant tax credits associated with the 55 and older and the 62 and older? That's why these individuals are getting into these programs. Isn't that correct? And there's significant loan advantages out there as well.
Those advantages and incentives are available to family housing as well. Okay. So whatever, there are a couple of companies that specialize with elderly housing and tax credit properties, Section 42 housing, and that's their focus. But if you had a developer that came in and had tax credits and those incentives for family housing, you must consider those equally as to their proposals. The minute you say, well, in elderly housing, there's going to be less people, less traffic, certainly less children to overburden our schools, our infrastructure, et cetera, that's illegal.
Correct.
Okay? But those incentives are available for family housing.
So an individual could change the purpose of the building to family status and still continue maintaining their credit, their tax advantage credit?
That's questionable. There's a sundown for those types of tax credit properties, and at the end of that sundown period, and is it 10 or 15 years?
It's 15 years.
Then they can continue to do that and get a credit, or they can say thank you very much for the money. Now we're out of the program. Some of them do, and the value or the attraction there is, of course, that this tends to be newer housing. It tends to be very high-quality housing, and somebody can come in and buy it and maintain it as elderly housing, or they can turn it into housing for everybody.
But the likelihood of that property changing, or reverting to a normal type of
Well, it all depends on how much money there's to be made by the developer with elderly housing. And, I mean, when you look at it, there's probably very good money to be made simply because, you know, we're all getting that much older.
My argument is, as council members, I mean, if we're proposed with a project like this, we shouldn't be worried about the changing of the status of the property. The status of the property should maintain the purpose that it was presenting to us. Properties can change hands all the time, and we're looking at it as a tax increment to the city, and if we made an initial investment or an agreement for that property to come in, the properties are going to change off and on from type to type based on the economy. and based on the population and the population swings. So, okay. No, I just don't want to belabor that.
Okay. Sounds good. Gee, now I forgot where I was.
Franklin City Hall.
Yeah. We were talking about age,
Franklin
and I jumped
City Hall.
In on...
How did I get here? Wow. No wonder I have to retire.
You're at age.
What?
Age.
65.
No.
Thank
you.
No, that's I thought you were asking.
First of all, it's illegal to ask in an employment situation. The second
I thought
thing
you were
is going to
get
impolite.
Into weight next. Then I was going to be offended. Ancestry, marital status, I think I mentioned, and lawful source of income. State law makes it illegal to discriminate against somebody based on where they get their income as long as it's legally derived. Housing providers, of course, can have income guidelines, but they must apply those uniformly. In Wisconsin, lawful source of income is employment, Social Security, disability. Food stamps are a lawful source of income in Wisconsin. Sexual orientation, whether one is heterosexual, homosexual, or bisexual, is protected. And victims of domestic abuse, sexual assault, and stalking are protected. And that's the newest one under state law. And again, I'm not saying you should or must amend your ordinance, but just suggesting that these are new both on state and federal levels.
Commissioner Leone.
I do have a question. Should I do normal state name and address?
Nah, we know who you are.
Okay. So under protective classes, and it's a bit of a detailed question and kind of a three-parter, and I apologize for that. But when I see sexual orientation here, there's a movement in the country that most people are probably familiar with gender identity. And the base of the question is there any movement towards gender identity being a protected class? There are numerous examples around the country and in the state, not necessarily in these examples, but in public schools and other public places to do with restrooms, mostly what we hear about in the news. My question would relate to those facilities that operate domestic abuse shelters. And oftentimes, it's been my experience that those are... they are legally discriminated and segregated by gender. So if gender identity, if there's some form of movement towards gender identity becoming either a federal or state protected class, is there room for a legal challenge where someone of one gender but they identify as the opposite, could make a case against a property owner who operates a domestic abuse shelter for residency there, and then what sort of exposure the municipality may have towards it. Maybe I'm making something out of nothing, but when I saw it, that was kind of one of the first things I thought of.
Well, your first point, gender identity is protected in many municipalities in the state of Wisconsin. It's not protected under state and federal fair housing laws. Is there a movement to get there? Very unlikely. And the reason for that has to do with the minute you open it up, you open it up to a lot of changes you may not want. So people who are looking to protect gender identity and would lobby for that may lose some other protections here. So there's a risk there to do that. But as a municipality, you can protect gender identity. How does it impact shelters? In most shelters, there are shared living facilities. And there is an exemption under both state and federal fair housing laws for shared living facilities based on gender specifically. Okay, so it would not be an issue. If the general ordinance from your municipality is similar in structure to what you currently have, very likely there would not be an issue.
Even if there were a change in protective, I mean, you say it's unlikely, and I believe that it is, but if something were to change, is there some sort of change in ordinance that would protect both the property owner where they're operating a domestic abuse shelter and the municipality from challenges that would expose the victims in those shelters? Just something to consider so that, you know, both the property owner and the city would have options should there be some sort of change.
Sure. A couple of things. First of all, if you're talking about a domestic abuse shelter, and that's the example you used, the program would be fundamentally altered were you to be able to allow men as well as women, okay? What we are lacking very likely is shelters for men who are abused, domestic abuse victims, okay? But the other thing is the exemption in both state and federal law, with your ordinance being silent on it, I think that could be appealed based on the fact that shared living facilities are exempt under the gender or sex status of both state and federal laws. In addition, under state law, people who are going to share a household are exempt based from that, in as much as it's legal to advertise and recruit for a same-sex person as you are, if you are, again, sharing living facilities. So I think that I don't see that as a problem.
And right now, though, it's talking about, and maybe I'm using the wrong definition here, but physiological or genetic gender versus gender identity.
Correct. Okay. But if I identify, and that is a big issue, actually, that part. If I identify as a man and try to enter a men's shelter for convents. What? I just got out of prison. Let's put it that way.
Convicts.
The politically correct term is a transitional facility.
Thank you. If I am trying to move into that transitional facility, okay, and I am actually a woman that identifies as a man, I think they have the same protections in as much as I am a woman. And it would fundamentally alter the program, and most of these programs are federally funded or subsidized. So
those programs are protected from, they can still legally discriminate against somebody who has gender identity opposite of their biological gender.
It's likely. I mean, the law is evolving. I mean, a case could be decided tomorrow that changes anything I've said tonight. But as of tonight, when I look nationally at what's going on, that's what I see.
To use your example, if there were biologically a man who identifies as a woman, and you say that there is a shortage, not just in our municipality, but probably
everywhere.
Nationally, I assume,
mm-hmm.
that they, if they identify as a woman, they could make a legal case if they were a protected class. You know, and I know that's a hypothetical, but I'm just looking at what are the ways that ordinances could be adjusted to protect the intent of those facilities so that they could continue to protect victims of domestic abuse and sexual assault and stuff. And again, maybe it's a non-issue and never will be, but just a consideration when I look at the classes.
The example I used in similar questions like this, we belong to a very litigious society. And if I own a property and it starts to snow and I shovel, and then it sleets and I put down salt, and it snows again and I shovel again, somebody might still fall and they might sue me. So there aren't any assurances whatsoever that everything that today you look at this and on its face, there seems to be no problem. But there just aren't any assurances there. I don't see it happening in Wisconsin. I don't see the Wisconsin open housing law being changed to add that. I don't see the federal law being changed to add that based on the political climate.
Thank you.
Okay. Can I go home now? I'm tired. No. The prohibitive practices, which are on the centerfold of that brochure, the things you cannot do if even in part, and this is where there's a slight difference between your ordinance and state and federal laws, if even in part your decisions are based on membership in protected class.